Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour number two of our show. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, are at the controls this morning. English may well be the most widely spoken language in the world, and as a result, some people have taken to calling it a global language. At the same time, there are some people who have called English a killer language because, as English becomes more widespread, other languages are dying out. And some people would like to blame English for that and say, well, that's really the problem. It is the spread of English. Has globalization promoted English at the expense of other languages? Well, that's a question we'll be talking about this morning in this part of the show as we talk with Salikoko Mufwene. He's professor of linguistics at the University of Chicago, and this is something that he has written on a great deal. He makes the argument that English may not be the killer that some people claim, that language loss is something rather more complicated. And in fact, he might argue that some indigenous languages are a bit more robust than we would think. He is here visiting the campus to give a talk. This is an event in the MillerCom series. They're always free and open to the public. So if you're interested in hearing more from him, you can stop by. He'll be giving his talk on Globalization and Language Endangerment, Africa versus the Americas. That's the title. He'll be speaking this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. This is on West Illinois in Urbana. And as I said, anybody should feel welcome to stop by. This morning, in this hour of the show, as we talk, questions are welcome from people who are listening. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to keep their questions and comments brief, and we just ask that so that we can keep our program moving along and get as many different people as possible. But certainly, questions are welcome. 333-9455, that's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We also do have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. So again, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
We certainly appreciate it. Is it possible to say how many languages have been lost, or perhaps a rough figure about how many languages have been lost in the last, say, 50 years or maybe the last century?
It's very difficult because you have to start with an assessment of how many languages were spoken around the world at that time. And we are guessing that there is about one language dying every day, but that is also very difficult to determine. We don't even know for sure how many languages are spoken around the world today. And we are worried about languages that are dying, but at the same time, we should also remember that there are new language varieties that are emerging. And so one way of putting things in perspective is the balance sheet of births and deaths, and figure out how the landscape of linguistic diversity is reshaping itself around the world.
Well, that might be another way of asking the question. If you look at language diversity,
yes,
then, do you think that we're losing language diversity, or is there is it more of a steady state in that, yes, you may be losing languages, but you're gaining new ones?
Well, I think the received doctrine is that we are losing diversity, but when you put things in perspective, it seems to me that it is one form of diversity being replaced by another form of diversity. We are speaking about English spreading around the world, but then as you look at English, it's like English is speciating into many different breeds at the same time. You know, already Australian English is different, New Zealand English is different, American English is different. Should we speak of American English or American Englishes? Southern English is different from Midwestern English. It's different from New England English. In a place like New York, you can distinguish different varieties of English. There's African-American English, and then there's British English. But British English, if you are outside the United Kingdom, you tend to think of it as a monolithic variety. But if you are in the United Kingdom, there are several varieties. So the history of the spread of English is similar to the spread of Latin. Latin spread around the Mediterranean and in a good deal of Europe. And today we speak of the Romance languages. So overall, yes, there are languages that are disappearing, but the languages that are prevailing win a Pyrrhic victory. And they become also more diverse at the same time.
Some people, I'm sure, that would argue that that globalization has contributed to English becoming the lingua franca, that is, the language that is commonly used in science and in business by people around the world, and that also has this this tendency to encourage people to speak English at the exclusion of of languages that perhaps were their first languages, and so for that, that's where we get to the killer English being the killer language. Do you think that that is in fact true?
Well, first of all, I have to underscore the fact that you use the term lingua franca in your question, because that's a critical concept in the whole discussion. English is spreading around the world primarily as a lingua franca, not as a vernacular. And the difference here is the lingua franca, the kind of language that you use when the other party doesn't know your language, or in some cases you don't have a language in common, and none of your vernaculars can serve as the common language, and you have to resort to a third-party language, and that's how English is spreading. But English is not necessarily spreading as a vernacular, the language that you use at home, the language that you use for day-to-day communication with your friends. And in many parts of the world, people are actually multilingual. There is a language for the home, there is a language for church, there is a language for business. And English is spreading primarily as a business language or language for scholarship. And in this capacity, English is not endangering other languages. There are places where English is endangering indigenous languages, but these are also places where English functions as a vernacular. So the situation with English in the United States and in Australia is not exactly the same as, say, in India or in Ghana or in Nigeria. The scenarios are different.
Yeah. This, I think, is a very interesting notion, and leads you to think maybe a little bit more carefully about this question about language laws. Mm-hmm. And that is, your point is that people will continue to hold on to the languages as long as they continue to serve a function.
Yes.
And that if then it, what happens when they lose their languages is when they don't serve that function anymore, or they don't need that function. It's not that another language has come in like a bully and swept the language aside.
Yeah.
So then I guess one has to ask this question, well, what is happening there that people should abandon their first language because they don't have any need for it anymore? It's not that another language has supplanted it necessarily, as it is they find that whenever they had been using it before, indeed, as you say, as a language that has to do with religious ceremonies, for example, you know, what's happening that causes the people to stop using it?
Well, if we are dealing with a religious ceremony, one of the questions that may come up is whether or not members of the congregation understand the language. For instance, there was a time when in the Catholic Church, Latin was the ritual language, but then people complained that the congregation couldn't follow the prayers, and it was more adequate to use a language that the congregation understood, and then people would give up on Latin. And this can happen in religious tradition. But in many cases, people don't deliberately just give up the language. They don't wake up one morning and say, we don't speak this language anymore. Mm-hmm. Whether or not a language prevails or whether or not a language dies is a cumulative effect of the communicative activities of a population. It's a matter of finding yourself in different situations and facing reality. What language do I speak now in order to get the job done? I need a job. What language do I speak to get this job? I want to sell this product. What language do I speak to sell this product? I'm here with a friend, and this friend speaks this language. Which kind of position are we in? Is it a position where he or she is going to learn my language, or is it a situation where I have to learn his or her language? Here you get an interplay of powers. Mm-hmm. And it depends on how many situations you find yourself in where you have to speak a particular language. Now, things may spread so far as where you start facing this problem also at home. What language is it more practical for me to speak? So you can have a family that is multilingual. You have the parents who immigrated here and who spoke one particular language, and then the kids go to school and they play with the majority population or the local population because they are the newcomers, and they learn the local vernacular. Now they come home, they have to alternate between the heritage language brought by the parents, and if there is there are grandparents, then there is more pressure to still speak the language. But then there comes a time when these kids grow up, they marry, they have children, and their children feel less pressure because the parents also speak the language of the community, the larger population. And at that time, there is less pressure to speak the heritage language anymore. Then you are dealing with something that is similar to atrophy. You don't use it, you lose the ability to use it, and voila, your language is gone before you know it. And then an occasion arises when you would like to speak the language, you realize that you are not competent anymore. And then you realize you are not alone. There are other people who have been doing the same thing, who have had similar experiences. This is how people lose their languages. Nobody really says, my language is not useful, I'm going to give it up. Everybody would like to continue speaking their languages, except that they find themselves in situations where they cannot use their languages. And the moment when they want to use these languages, they are no longer competent in these languages. That's the phenomenon of attrition, and this is generally how languages die. But very often, it really starts with the world outside home, who you interact with, how much pressure you feel there to communicate in a language other than your heritage language.
Yeah. It is striking how quickly that kind of thing can happen, and I think that the way I've often heard it described, particularly as something that's associated with people moving from one place to another,
yes.
Particularly moving, say, from the place that they were born to another place, mm-hmm. is that your first generation of immigrants, maybe they still feel most comfortable in what had been their first language, the language that maybe they had grown up speaking.
Right.
And then, as you say, then their children are more likely to be bilingual because they've got to operate in this new world, and they may be in school, but of course they're still talking with their parents, and then they may still be living in a community where there are a lot of people who are still speaking that first language. But by the time you get to the third generation, by the time you get to the grandchildren, yes. they don't speak the language anymore at all. So we go from maybe still primarily are feeling comfortable in the original language to some sort of mid-ground where people are maybe function pretty well in both, to suddenly now we have lost the original language completely and have managed to do that over a relatively short period of time.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah, and it also depends on how long your grandparents live and whether you still visit your grandparents, because mm-hmm. out of respect, You know, you would prefer to communicate with them in the language of your heritage. The moment they die, you are left with those people who at some point are bilingual, and then they become dominant in the new language. And once they become dominant in the new language, little by little, you have these kids that are monolingual, and they speak only the host country's language.
Yeah. Which could be English, but then again, it could be French, it could be German, it could be a lot of different languages.
Right. In North America, you have people shifting to English. If you are in Brazil, you have people shifting to Portuguese.
We have a couple of callers here. Perhaps also I should introduce again our guest, Salikoko Mufwene from the Department of Linguistics at the University of Chicago. We're talking about loss of language and whether or not globalization plays some role in that and whether or not English plays some role in that. He'll be giving a talk on the subject this afternoon on the U of I campus at 4. It's a Millercom event. This is at the Levis Faculty Center, and anyone interested should stop by. Questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And we have some callers, and we'll start with someone in St. Louis on line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Urbana-Champaign. I wish I could attend your talk this afternoon, but unfortunately I won't be able to make it. Africa has a number of indigenous lingua franca, like Swahili, Igbo, Wolof, et cetera, that put pressure on the other languages and are also similar enough in some cases to other languages that they sort of blend together. I was hoping you could talk about the situation in South America, if they have lingua franca that are indigenous languages too, or if it's mainly Spanish and Portuguese that function as lingua franca there, and I will listen to your answer off the air.
In Latin America, especially during the colonial period, there was a lingua geral, for instance, that was spoken in Brazil, and media lingua that was spoken, I believe, in Ecuador. But what happened is that Latin America is a set of settlement colonies, like in North America. Things didn't progress as far as they did in North America. But in time, Portuguese and Spanish prevail and reduce the role of these traditional lingua francas. And so first Portuguese and Spanish dealt a blow, deadly blow to these lingua francas, and they are receding. And now it's really the competition between Portuguese and the indigenous vernaculars and not the lingua francas anymore, because Portuguese and Spanish are really penetrating all domains of language practice in South America. And that's different from Africa, because Africa was colonized on a different model. That's the exploitation colonization. And the Europeans were not necessarily interested in transforming Africa culturally. If anything happened, they stratified Africa and brought in a layer for an elite class that would be partly Europeanized, Westernized, and could function in the European languages, but this particular class would use the Europeans not as vernaculars, but as lingua francas. Mm. But the other thing that happened in Africa is that with urbanization, then the indigenous lingua francas gain momentum. And if anything, it's the indigenous lingua francas that are threats to the indigenous vernaculars, and not the European languages that are threats to the indigenous vernaculars. The other thing is that in some places, even the European languages may feel threatened by the expansion of the urban lingua francas, the indigenous lingua francas, and this has to do with economics. I don't know whether we have to get into that right now, but overall, my position is whether or not a language will spread and threaten other languages depends very much on the role that the language plays in the economic lives of a population.
Yeah. This is, I think this is a very interesting point that you seem to be saying that rather than globalization perhaps being a big force in language loss, urbanization is the greater, and indeed economics are important. The necessity of having to make a living, and then the question is, well, what language do I need to function in to make a living?
Right.
So economics really is a very important force in pushing people to use one language as opposed to another.
Yes. And what language do I have to raise my children in so that they are competitive on the job market? And what language do I raise my family in so that they can be they can feel integrated in the larger population? These are the kinds of pressures that people feel. But without necessarily saying, because we have to get integrated, we have to give up the other language. That is a different issue. People are concerned with fitting in, with being competitive. And language loss is really a side effect that people didn't plan.
The other thing that I think it's interesting that caller brings up the example of Latin America, because it seems to me that the pace of language loss has not been as great in Latin America as it is for example in some place like Africa.
Yeah, actually, it is probably language endangerment and loss have been faster in Latin America than in Africa, but slower in Latin America than in North America. And that has to do especially with what we may call glocalization. It's not really globalization at the worldwide level, but globalization on a local, regional scale, and the kinds of pressures that people feel at that level, and the extent to which the different sectors of the economy are interconnected and interdependent, and the extent to which the rural and the urban environments are more or less integrated. And you find quite a bit of variation between North America, Latin America, and Africa. And Africa is really at the very end of that scale, where there is less industrialization, greater contrast between the urban environment and the rural environment, and the pressures are not felt in the same ways.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk with someone in Urbana next, line two. Hello.
Good morning. I'm interested in the ideas that accompany a language. For example, if you compare American English to a traditional African language like Igbo or Yoruba or Swahili, it seems to me from what I've read and studied that there's a collective sense of identity in Africa still, whereas in the United States we're very individualized. And so what bothers me about the loss of a language is you're really losing cultural ideas a lot of times. And I wondered if the guests would have some comments on that. I mean, yeah, you can be bilingual and you can try to accommodate the economic demands of your local environment, but doesn't it have deeper effects on the ideas that individuals live by when they have to give up an old language, you know, to become westernized or modern?
Well, yes and no. No, because culture is not static. Identity is not static. Mm-hmm. We are constantly reshaping our cultures, our identities as we go. And you can give up your language without giving up your culture. And I think a whole lot of this is happening in Africa. You can come across an African who speaks English or French as their mother tongue, but who is completely African. Well, completely, I don't know, but largely African in their identity. And such individuals discover it very fast when they move out of Africa and go to Europe, and realize that, first of all, the French or English that they speak is not the one that is spoken in Europe, and that what they thought was a westernized culture, once they are in Europe, people still treat it as African culture and so forth. What's happening is that as people change, their cultures and identities change too. And I don't know if there is any place, even in the most rural parts of Africa, that have remained traditionally Africa, like Africa was 100 years ago. Now, saying that people have a better sense, a greater sense of the traditional identities in Africa than, say, in North America, that I really don't know. When you are in Africa, if you are Igbo, you are Igbo, you are Yoruba, you are Yoruba. If you are, I don't know if I should speak of Swahili, because Swahili is so widespread, but if you are Nande, you are Nande, whatever language you invoke. So there is a lot of diversity. But at the same time, if you live in the city, you don't really go by that ethnic identity anymore. You go by the identity of being urban, of being modern, and so forth, and the language that you privilege tends to be, especially if you were born in the city, tends to be the dominant language of the city rather than the language of your parents. And in that respect, that's an evolution that is pretty similar to that of the United States, where you forget that your parents are of German descent or of French descent, and you are just American, except if you must valorize that particular ancestry.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And again, questions are welcome. We're about our midpoint here in this part of Focus 580, talking with Salikoko Mufwene. He's on the faculty in the Department of Linguistics at University of Chicago, and is here to give a talk on the subject of language endangerment, what that's about, what are the forces that cause people to lose their languages, and particularly drawing some comparisons between Africa and the Americas. He'll be talking this afternoon at 4 at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. This is an event in the MillerCom series, and it's open to the public. Anyone who would like to attend is welcome. And questions here, welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. When we talk about the again the forces that might contribute to language loss, what is the role that the increasing availability of public education play?
Well, it plays a role, especially on the kids. The extent to which it leads kids to socialize with one another in one single language, and the extent to which it leads kids to recognize what language is really dominant and needed in the workplace where they are. And the extent to which when they get home, they may tell their parents, they don't really say it like that, but they behave as if they were telling their parents, we don't really have to speak like you, because the rest of the world doesn't speak like you. It's a kind of discovery of the world outside the home and its pressure to make some selections, whether you want to be a conformist and or you want to be different. And people have different personalities, and not all kids are conformists. And there are kids that have strong personalities and say, hey, I can be different. I can speak like my parents. And there are kids that say, it's not convenient for me to speak like my parents. For one thing, I won't have many friends. For one thing, I won't be competitive, and things like that. So, that's the effect of education. But education alone won't do the trick. Education, what the education plans to do, must be validated, supported by the socioeconomic environment. If you can teach as much French to American kids as you want, but once, because French is not used in the business world, there is no practicality for it. So in a way, you are teaching French as a museum piece. It's a curiosity, but it doesn't have much practicality. And what we are really looking for is something practical, something that is going to be rewarding, something. I have a view that is mostly utilitarian about language. You have to find it profitable. There are some people who learn many languages because, let's say, they want to show off. They want to be able to brag around, say, I speak such and such languages. But it's not like the average person that wants to invest in a language, and it is an investment in intellectual activity, in cognitive abilities, in time. And you invest in it because you want to get something back, and generally it's because you want to fit in the socioeconomic universe in which you are evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I guess it leads me to think about the criticism that has so often been made about America and Americans being monolingual,
right?
And about the argument that many people would make that it would be a good thing for Americans to have a second language. But then that begs the question: well, supposing that they do,
yes,
what do they do with it? What opportunities do they have to use it? And
right,
I suppose one might say that particularly in business, one might. So that would argue for, from time to time, I suppose there would have been a time when there was great growth in the economy of Japan, and people were saying, you want to succeed in business, you should learn Japanese. Well,
yes,
now I suppose people are saying, you want to succeed in business, you should learn Mandarin.
Yes.
Or maybe there will be a time when we'd say Portuguese or Hindi, or
yes,
people, I suppose, you know, there would have been a time during the Cold War, people have said, well, you know, maybe you might want to learn,
yes,
Russian. And every time that the sort of reality changed, somehow the target language seems to change.
And indeed, America is very complex. It's not that all Americans are not interested in foreign languages. And there are very smart businessmen, American businessmen, who learn foreign languages because they want to be competitive in foreign markets. Mm-hmm. And smart American businessmen learn Japanese if they want to have strong investments in Japan, because they know that once you go to Japan, it's not smart to have the Japanese talk about, around you in Japanese, and you don't understand a word of what they are saying. You depend on a translator, and there is something lost in the translation. You would like to understand it yourself. But also, the Japanese are learning English so that they can sell goods to America. And Americans who want to sell goods to Japan, they know it's very smart to learn something about Japanese culture, about Japanese language, and so forth, so that you can be more effective. Mm. And people are indeed investing in Chinese, in Mandarin, because it's going to be useful. You want to sell in China. It's smart to know the local language. And one of the reasons why English is spreading around the world is because everybody has something to sell to North America and to the United Kingdom. You want to get a slice of the cake.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm,
the benefits of having useful relations, commercial relations with the United States. And it's not that America and the United Kingdom really want the rest of the world to speak their language. It's that they are playing such a central role in the global market that everybody who wants to deal with them would like to be able to interact with them in the language that their populations understand. And actually, I have often said in my work, businessmen are not linguistic missionaries. They are people who would give up their own language and speak the other's language as long as it is economically sensible. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think then it is problematic that so many Americans are monolingual?
Well, if you live only in the United States, if you don't go abroad, then, you know, why do you have to learn the other language? But if you are going to travel, it's common sense to learn the language of the place that you are going to visit. Of course, there are so many different places that Americans go to, and not everybody has the time, nor the necessary investment to learn all those languages. But it helps to know some of those languages because as you travel abroad, you come across many different people who don't speak English, and you would learn a whole lot more about those places if you spoke a language other than English.
Let me ask you a different sort of question. Mm-hmm. Once a language is gone, once it has been lost, is it ever possible truly to recover it? Can you get it back?
You can recreate something that is related to the dead language, but you are not getting it back. I mean, people have been claiming that Hebrew has been resurrected in Israel. Mm-hmm. But Israeli Hebrew is not biblical Hebrew. It's a new language. There are a lot of materials that came from biblical Hebrew in the development of modern Israeli Hebrew, but there are also elements that came from other languages. So Israeli Hebrew is not a resurrected biblical Hebrew. It's a different thing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And I suppose that there are some attempts to, in a sense, recreate some Native American languages.
Yeah.
As well. So it sounds like you would say the same thing that might be a fine thing
right,
to do,
right.
But it's not, you're not getting the original.
No, you are not going to get the same language. Not any more than English has really remained the same over the past 100 years. It has changed, and it would have to change because you have to adapt that language to its new communicative functions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk with somebody else here on a cell phone. They're in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm curious to know if your guest has any comment about whether any particular languages are inherently scientifically, measurably better than other languages. Are they more efficiently spoken or more easily learned or map on the brain in a different way? And I'll listen on the air. Thanks.
There is no language that is better or more suited for communication than any other language. However, every language has evolved in a particular cultural context and is adapted to the communicative needs of the populations that have been using it, of the people that have been speaking it. And once you use it in a different cultural context, you have to make adjustments. You may have to borrow a number of structures from other languages. You may have to borrow a number of words from other languages. And that is one of the reasons why English has been has spread so widely, because it has been adapted to local ecologies in different places to the point where you might hear people speak English in one part of the world, and if you come from North America, you may not recognize it as English. Hmm. It has been adapted.
And I'm sure that the same thing happens as happened with other languages as well, depending on, I suppose, colonization is the big force here. That, for example, there are places in Africa where people speak French.
Yes.
And Portuguese,
yes,
and English,
yeah,
and I'm not sure how many other European languages are commonly spoken.
Yeah, and I mean Africa is an easy example to select, in part because European languages in Africa have not been used exactly in the same ways that they have been used, say, in the Americas. In Africa, European languages have served as lingua francas, and also the mode of transmission is not as naturalistic. Here in North America, even if English is taught to foreigners in school, the vast majority of people have acquired the language as their mother tongue. So, naturalistically, by interacting with other speakers, fluent speakers, native speakers. In Africa, you transmit the language through the school system, through books. And it's like teaching somebody to read Latin, make translations in Latin, and so forth. And then you say, I think now you have learned enough, try to speak it. And it's a very artificial experience, and which is one of the reasons why these European languages have changed so much in Africa. I think I lost track of the rest of the question here.
Well, I'm interested in this notion that what we have here mm-hmm. is, say, in Francophone
yeah.
Africa, that what we really have here is something that's different.
Yes.
And your idea that if we pick somebody up and we drop them down into the middle of Paris,
yeah.
that they might have a difficult
right.
time.
Yes.
And I'm interested, and I'm sure that within linguistics there are names for that that kind of variant
yeah.
language variant. But I'm interested in the idea that what you can actually end up with is something that is really different. And it goes back to your earlier comment about, yes, there are a lot of people around the world that are speaking English, but there are different Englishes.
Yeah.
North Americans are different from people in New Zealand and Australia. And there are a lot of people on the Indian subcontinent who speak
yeah.
English
yeah.
as well. So
yeah.
I'm interested in this idea that what you're ending up with is actually something that's different.
Yeah, you wind up with something that is different. And actually here at the University of Illinois, there is a department of world Englishes, I think. But at least there is a group of scholars here who are interested in the indigenization of English outside North America and the United Kingdom, and they refer to these varieties as indigenized Englishes. And, you know, this is because there has been a debate over whether or not these Englishes spoken in Africa and in Asia are legitimate varieties of English, or whether they are just some sorts of bastard tongues. But when you put things in a historical perspective, even American English or American Englishes are indigenized Englishes. They have indigenized outside the United Kingdom. They have taken something of a local colonial color that mm-hmm. makes them different from whatever the original was.
Mm-hmm.
But it so happens that the original itself was so diverse, because the idea of a monolithic English in the United Kingdom is an illusion. There are so many different dialects. So there are complex dynamics that are engaged in the spread of languages that contribute to making them different at different places. Funny interactions, so to speak, between the indigenous languages and the new language that give a new form to the dominant language, the dominant lingua franca, as it spreads around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much different? Say you have a variety of a language, say a variety of English or a variety of French
mm-hmm.
that you see in a place where that was not the first people's first language, where there were indigenous languages that then affect the way people speak English or French.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you cross the line between something that you would say is a variant of English, and then you get into talking about something that would be like a Creole
yeah.
or something that gets even further away
yeah.
from English or French?
That's a political and social gradients. I mean, it involves a number of attitudes. There are probably some objective criteria, but they are very difficult to define. When we deal with Creoles, we are speaking basically about the spread and transformation of varieties that were non-standard in the beginning. And when we speak of indigenized Englishes or Français Africain, as the French refer to French varieties in Africa, we are talking about these artificial scholastic varieties that have been transmitted through the school medium. And then in the end, people are encouraged to speak and they produce different varieties, and that's another story altogether. Now, there is a continuum between these indigenized varieties and the Creole varieties. And somewhere in between, whether you fit a language fits in the Creole category or in the indigenized category, it depends very much on social attitudes. And even when we focus on the Creoles themselves, when you really re-examine the socio-historical context in which Creoles have emerged, you find out that there is a lot of politics involved. And non-native varieties spoken by descendants of Africans. I'm sorry, I meant to say, yeah, where is it, non-native varieties? The new varieties that are spoken by descendants of Africans are very often disenfranchised as Creoles. And a new variety spoken by descendants of Europeans, regardless of their ancestry, are not treated as Creoles. They are treated as new dialects of these languages. And these are all matters of colonial attitudes. And I think that linguistics has been trapped in these biases too and has adopted these terms which are not so easy to really justify and operationalize.
Yeah. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe 3-4 minutes left. I observed at the beginning about, made some sort of observation about how widely spread English is, how widespread it is in its use.
Mm-hmm.
It may be in terms of the total number of speakers, there are other languages like Mandarin and Hindi. Probably there are more people, mm-hmm. if you just talk about the total number of people who speak the languages,
more
people who speak those. But if you said, well, in terms of how widely spread they are, say, around the world, English is the more more dominant and indeed has become that language that we have used the phrase, I've used it, you use it, lingua franca, which again is that it's that idea that if two people come together and they need to talk with each other, but they, each of them speaks different languages, can they find a third one that they can speak in? And for a lot of people, that third language becomes English.
Right.
Now, I suppose in some of these other languages, there might, you know, who knows, there might be some opportunity for that to become a lingua franca, although you have a lot. Chinese certainly is a very difficult language to learn, both in its written and spoken forms. I'm not sure about something like Hindi, but I guess my question is: do you think that there is the potential for something else to be as widespread and used in the way that English?
Yeah,
is?
The reason why Mandarin or Hindi won't function as worldwide lingua francas yet doesn't have anything to do with how difficult they are. It has to do with how much economic power they have, and whether or not they have really benefited from some sort of colonial legacy. English has the advantage of having been the language of the British Empire and having been transplanted to many places around the world. And it has benefited from the economic and military hegemony of two key players, the United States and the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And China, I don't know whether it is close yet to playing that kind of imperial role around the world, but that would be the kind of factor that would spread it and make of it the kind of worldwide lingua franca that English is.
Yeah, well, I guess I think that's an interesting point. I suppose I hadn't really appreciated that to the extent that the economic platform on which things rest, and I suppose if you would imagine that things had gone differently and China had had the empire that had Britain had had, well, then I suppose we would be speaking Mandarin right now.
Exactly. And it wouldn't be no more
and
difficult than
no problem with it.
Learning English now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you, it's a very fascinating subject. And again, I suggest people can stop by and hear the talk that you're going to give. I suppose, though, that there will continue to be the kind of concern about language loss. That's not something that's going to. Languages have always been lost, so
yes.
Maybe that's just a fact of life. This is something, though. Do you think that will continue to be a concern?
Yes, and the whole history of mankind is marked by language death, language birth, a replacement of one form of diversity by another form of diversity. Maybe things are moving faster now than they ever did before, but that's because we are also in a universe that is moving, evolving faster than, let's say, 2 centuries ago or 1 century ago. But otherwise, we will always deal with it. And one thing that makes us different, makes these times different from the previous times, is that we are aware of the phenomenon of the endangerment of species. And here, too, we are looking at languages as some sorts of species that are endangered in particular kinds of ecologies.
Our guest, Solikoko Mufwene, is professor of linguistics at University of Chicago. He'll be talking on the topic globalization and language endangerment, particularly making some comparisons between the case of Africa and of the Americas. He'll be talking this afternoon at 4 at the Levis Faculty Center on the campus. That's on West Illinois. And this is an event in the MillerCom series. And they're always open and open to the public, free. Anyone who's interested in attending should stop by. And thank you very much.
Thank you for having me here.